As many of you know, I like cycling, but as some of you might already have heard, this morning at 9:30, I was not at the 9:30 service. I was stuck on a train in Princess Street Gardens and had been sitting there for 20 minutes. At 9:35, I was halfway up Kirk Bray, feeling the burn. It's not something I recommend. But as I gave the sermon, dripping in sweat, at 10 to 10 this morning, my point had been made before I already started. But it's fair to say that I am not this man. Now, he doesn't train in Kirk Bray. He trains in a gym with crash mats around his bike. And the reason that the crash mats are there is because he cycles so hard and so fast that he literally falls off his bike onto a crash mat where the pain from the lactic acid building up in his legs gets worse and not better. There were no crash mats here this morning when I arrived. But it's not such an attractive image as the ones you see here. But behind these images of victory are the images of him lying on a crash mat. We seem to celebrate the achievements of people who push themselves to the very limits. And not just in sport. One of the most celebrated companies in the world at the moment is Apple. And one of the most iconic products that they've produced is the iPhone. They launched it in 2007, and it's fair to say it's revolutionized the way that people approach their phones. In the first 3 years, they sold 100 million. And they created a $10 billion industry in third-party applications, or apps, as they're known. Now, Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, when he launched it, he said, "This is not just a communication tool, but a way of life." And the media began to dub this the Jesus phone, partly because of the devotion it seemed to inspire in its followers, and partly because of the seemingly miraculous abilities that it had. But it's just a phone. But last week in the New York Times, they ran an article looking behind the scenes at how this phone came to be. It was an incredibly secretive project. Some people in Apple didn't know that other people in Apple were also working on it. And one of the key personnel was a guy called Andy Greenian. And it was his job as an expert in radio technology to make the phone a phone. But it says of him, as one of the iPhone's earliest engineers, he dedicated 2.5 years of his life, often 7 days a week, to the project. And he goes on to describe the process. The pressure to meet Steve Jobs' deadlines was so intense that normal discussions quickly devolved into shouting matches. Exhausted engineers would quit their jobs, and then they'd come back to work a couple of days later, having slept. Now, I'm not meaning to pick an Apple, because actually, those stories are not unique to that company. But the fact is, behind so many of the things that we like, the phones we buy, the films that we flock to, the television programs that we watch, behind them are some exhausted people working far too hard to meet completely unrealistic deadlines. But of course, in church, it's different. In church, nobody gets tired. Nobody wishes there were more people to help them. Nobody takes on too much. And no one finds that their relationship with God is suffering because of the demands that are being made of them. There aren't any exhausted people in church. Isn't that right? See, I thought maybe Liberton was different. But it's possible that here too, we celebrate the achievements of people that are pushing themselves to the limit. The minister who's always there for you. The Sunday school teacher who hasn't missed a Sunday in 25 years. The elder with the busiest job in the biggest district. I had a friend in the summer who said something to me that really made me think. She said, "Why is it that we're so desperate to get people through the doors when all that happens to them once they come in is that they get put on a rota?" Now, I hope that's not the whole story. I really hope not. But actually, there was a cry of pain in that for her, because she had spoken up at a church meeting to say she was too busy. And her friends were too busy as well. And since raising it, the only thing that has happened is that she was asked if she could help with the holiday club. So what does the Bible have to say about all this? Let's come to a reading. In Exodus 20, and starting at verse 8, it says, "Remember the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." Now, some of you already are beginning to think, "Oh, something else I need to work on. I need to rest more. I'm not observing the Sabbath properly. I must do better." And actually, already what we're doing is we're twisting it into something that it isn't. So this morning, what I want to do is just take a different perspective on what it means to observe the Sabbath, what it means to keep a day holy, that helps us to escape this trap of trying to turn the gospel into some kind of self-improvement program where we must do better, we must do more, we must rest better. So Sabbath is supposed to be rest for our souls, not a rod for our backs. The Hebrew word that John was talking about earlier, Shabbat, that we translate as Sabbath, it means to rest, but it's a fullness of rest. It's a ceasing, but it also has connotations of celebrating. So it's a positive thing. But it's fair to say that what it means to keep the Sabbath holy has varied enormously over the centuries. From the Jewish rites of celebrating a meal together that was prepared in advance, to some Scottish island communities who would lock the swings on a Sunday. Very different ways of keeping the Sabbath. And it's so easy to turn rest into legalism. Just ask Jesus. He came eating corn and healing people on the Sabbath. And the religious people weren't too happy. They got a bit twitchy. And he had to remind them, actually, it wasn't that they were created for the Sabbath. It was that the Sabbath was created for them. It's supposed to be for our good. And what's interesting, the text here, is that it doesn't start by saying, thou shalt not. It starts by saying, remember. Now, you can't remember something that you've never been told. So this was not the first time that they'd kept the Sabbath. They're to remember to keep on keeping it. It's an encouragement. So just as when Cain murdered Abel, long before it was written in stone, thou shalt not murder, it was wrong. In the same way, to rest on the Sabbath was right a long time before it was carved in stone. So it's meant to be rest. And the other interesting thing here is that they link the Sabbath with creation. And one commentary I read about it, he said, this grounds the sanctity or the holiness of Sabbath in the creative act of God. It's like it's built in to the very structure of the universe. We're meant to rest. We're meant to stop. It's not that rest is an optional extra, but it's vital. It's vital in the sense of the word meaning life. It's necessary for life. So if what you do or don't do on the Sabbath is becoming a rod for your back, can I suggest we need to return to the sense of it being rest for your souls, that sense of it being vital for well-being. And not just for your own well-being, but for the well-being of those around you. In verse 10, you have this very lengthy list of exactly who it is that should rest. And this emphasizes that the rest is not a luxury for the rich and the important. It's necessary for everyone in your household. The Sabbath is for everyone. But take a look at that list and see if you can see who's missing. Because the you, as in you shall not work here, is masculine in the Hebrew. You, the man, shall not do any work, and neither shall your daughter, and neither shall your son. Even the animals get a rest. But who's missing? The woman. The wife's missing. In the next verse, she's there. You have to honour your father and your mother. And I don't want to push too far into the text this sense, but I think it's interesting that the equality in the next verse is missing from this one. The reason it's interesting is because certainly it's been our practice down through the centuries that Sabbath has worked a lot better for men than it has for women. And if we think about our own culture and tradition, maybe you can recall Sundays when you were growing up. Maybe there were only certain books you were allowed to read. But who was it that was slaving away in the kitchen? We took the Jewish idea of Sabbath, which was a pre-prepared meal, and we made it into a Sunday dinner. But the principle of the text here is that Sabbath is for everybody. Even the animals. But our practice often has meant that Sabbath has neglected a lot of women. So what does it mean for Sabbath to be a day of rest when the kids need fed and watered and the washing machine needs on again? Or what does it mean as a woman if you don't have children And people assume because of that, that you can devote yourself to church activities. And so you can be on the rota twice. And we have this saying, don't we, that a woman's work is never done. Where did that come from? Certainly not found there. There you see that rest is for everyone. And I think collectively, we've failed to give the gift of Sabbath to a lot of women. And it's not too late to say sorry, to change our practices, and to ensure that our own rest is balanced with the rest of other folk. Now, working out what that means in your household is a difficult thing. It's not easy, but it's vital. For us, it means we have different Sabbaths on different days. Because for Sally to have Sabbath from childcare has to happen on a different day. And my Sabbath is not Sunday, because this is one of my main working days. So we've had to renegotiate when we take a rest. But there's a danger that that can become another rota. And that's not the spirit of this. It's not just about giving one another time off. It's about rest that reorientates us towards God. We're going to come back to that. But the sense that Sabbath should be part of a rhythm of rest. So these symbols, it's the musical sign for a rest. And that's the musical sign to repeat. And these are the two images that have been in my head this week, thinking about this. Rest and repeat. A further irony is that the image came into my head last Monday on my day off. I was off to see a friend on my bike, and I thought, that's it, that's what I want to say. It's about rest and repetition. But it's my day off. Oh, I'm talking about having time off, and here I am on my day off, coming up with the image that I want to use, and oh no, what am I going to do? And I think that's okay, I think that's the point. Because the important thing is what I did next. I didn't go home and sit down at the computer and start bashing it out. But I was able to go, thank you, God. Thank you. I'll put that to one side and I'll come back to it later in the week. Because that kind of thing often happens. It's the rest that brings the inspiration. That's why you get these good ideas in the shower or at the bus stop. The rest seems to let your brain make leaps that otherwise it wouldn't make. So this rest is as important as the work. Rest's actually an important part of working. And resting well can take work. It's not easy sometimes. There's a discipline to not working. And we shouldn't underestimate the effort that goes into doing less. But there's different lengths of rest in music. I don't want to put too much vocabulary to it. So there's wee rests, and then there's bigger rests, and then there's really big rests. And I think there's something to that. You know, every day we need to sleep. But we need those rhythms of rest in the day to sustain us. But we also have Sabbath. We have a day a week set apart to remind us of the importance of rest and to reorientate us back towards God. But within the Jewish tradition, you had the Sabbath every week, but you also had high Sabbaths, big rests. And there was celebration to that as well. And the church kept a lot of those traditions on. It wasn't just that there was Sabbath, but there were these feast days or holy days, holidays. And one of the great tragedies in the Reformation was that we threw the baby out with the bathwater and we got rid of all these feast days because there were some concerns around, why is it that we're having these feast days and praying to particular people rather than to God? And they got rid of all of it. And loads of people lost their holidays. Their holy days. Because actually there's something sacred about holiday. There's something sacred about that chance to rest, that longer chance. Sometimes a day is not enough. But it's this pattern of daily rest and weekly rest and more occasional rest that actually is the fuel that sustains us for the work that we want to do. And that's why you call a break from work a sabbatical. But who is it that gets the sabbaticals? Have you ever spoken to a cleaner and they said, aye, I've got a sabbatical coming up. I've got a couple of months just to consider the history of cleaning and different cleaning practices around the world. And I think it will sustain and nourish me as I come back to my job. And we're laughing. But surely there's a place for sabbatical in every area of work. We all need that. There's a certain irony to doctors dragging themselves out of bed shattered to sign other people off from work. Because it's like the Sabbath has been paid for in arrears. That time off work. Because we didn't learn that rhythm of resting. Because we were waiting for somebody else to give us the permission. When actually, God has already given us that permission. So Sabbath, I'll come back to that. It's meant to be vital. If you think to those Apple employees, they were handing in their notice because they were shattered. And all they needed was for somebody to say, take some time. Take tomorrow off and come back refreshed. But maybe Sabbath for us means a rest from technology. Maybe there is something to turning the telly off one day a week. Maybe we could put the phone away, switch the wireless off. Maybe what we actually need is a 24/6 culture. This idea that we're always on, that we're always reachable, that we're always available. I'm not sure that it's good for our souls. I really like this quote from an American writer, Lauren Winner. It's this idea that getting away from the rules and into orientation, away from the busyness of the week and towards the Creator who rested. There's a wee song that we'll sing as the offering's taken up in a wee minute. And because it's just a wee song and it takes a while for the offering to go round, the bright ones among you will realise we're going to sing it quite a few times. But there's a reason for that. It might not be familiar to you at first, and I'll lead the singing. But by the time we've finished, it will be familiar. But there's also something about the way this music has been written that's about rest and repetition. So they've taken a text and they've made the words fit the music in a way where you'll hear there's pauses between the lines. And then we repeat it. And it's like an embodiment of this principle. Because Sabbath is supposed to be rest, and it's supposed to be repetition. Rest for our souls. A Sabbath for everybody, and not just some of us. And Sabbath as part of a rhythm of rest. So let's take a wee moment to rest. And then Callum will play through the tune, and then I'll lead us in singing, and then the offering will be taken up.